Hey, what's up, my friends? Welcome back to the Pilgrimage Podcast. For those waking up to the wonder in all things, celebrating truth and beauty, seeking to live fully here, fully present, fully human. I'm excited about the episode we got in store for you guys today. Before I get onto that, I want to remind you, tell you about the Pilgrimage platform. The Pilgrimage.co is a space that I created for us to engage a little deeper, for us to talk more, spend more time together. If you sign up today, it is just supporting the work that I'm doing. It's keeping this podcast going. It's helping other people interact with the work that I'm creating, for which I am so grateful for. And in return, what you get is an email from me where I just dive a little deeper into some of the things I'm talking about and exploring on the podcast. I also send new music through, new poetry. And this week, I actually dropped two new songs that I sent to the Pilgrimage subscribers, which is so fun. You know, when you're so used to dropping music on Spotify and, you know, Apple Music and everything, just to send an email with, hey, here's some new music. And I loved hearing your responses. I'm so grateful. I also have a clothing line through the Pilgrimage.co. And so you get discount across everything I release. Your money goes a little bit further. And I'm just really grateful for everyone who has subscribed and for all of you who listen to the podcast and share it. It gets the word out there. My hope, my prayer is that people listen to this podcast and feel a little more awake, a little more alive, a little more hopeful, a little more joy, a little more peace. That's my hope. That's my desire. So every little does help, and sharing it goes a long way. I appreciate it. This episode is actually an episode I originally recorded last year. I wrote and recorded it last year, but you know what? It feels so appropriate for right now. It's a podcast that explores what to do with our aloneness, explores what to do with these desolate places of our life, these spaces that seem so fruitless and isolated. Isn't that just so apt for right now? And it's an episode that explores, you know, could it be that it's in those spaces, in these spaces, where we have the potential to become alive like never before, awake like never before, and present to ourselves and to those around us like we never would have been able to without the distance and without the desolate nature of this moment. So I hope it's an encouragement. Let me know if it is. Keep sharing it, and I appreciate you all. Let's do this. This episode is called The Art of Being Alone, and something that's been stirring in me for the best part of a year. Process I've been on, and I wanted to share it with you. I'm calling this a sermonette because I'm doing this in the style and in the art of a sermon. I'm getting into some ancient scriptures, and if you're sat here listening to this being like, oh man, sermon, I'm about to switch off, please don't. Just stay with me. The sermon is a manner of performance art. It's a manner of poetry. It's a manner of exploring and exporting ancient ideas and understanding of the world in new ways. And I want to do that today. So I'm going to look at a scripture. It doesn't matter if you've ever read the Bible or not, but I'm going to dig into it. It's a scripture out of the book of Matthew, chapter 14. And it's a very, very powerful bit of text. So I'm going to read it to you right now, and then I'm going to just share some thoughts on it that I have, that I hope and I pray might be some level of encouragement to you, a pilgrim, because that's what we are. We're all pilgrims. We're all journeying. We're all walking somewhere. We don't even all know where we're going, but we know there's a destination ahead of us. And the power of being a pilgrim is that you come into this understanding that the transformation happens en route, not when you arrive. And so this is a sermonette for the pilgrims. So this is Matthew 14. It said this: after John's death, John the Baptist we're talking about here, after John's death, Jesus heard the news and he withdrew from there in a boat to a desolate place by himself. John the Baptist was a relative of Jesus. He was one of his best friends. So this is heavy, heavy news. So he withdrew from there in a boat to a desolate place by himself. But when the crowds heard where he was going, they followed him on foot from the towns. And when he arrived and got ashore, he saw a great crowd and he had compassion on them and he healed their sick. This is really powerful because Jesus is basically just hearing that one of his boys, one of his guys is dead, and this guy hasn't died of illness. John was murdered, brutally murdered, and Jesus has just found this out, and he's devastated. And so he's leaving where he currently is to find a place of emptiness. It says a desolate place, which means fruitless, a place of barrenness, a place where he can be utterly alone to grieve and meet with God and pray and be alone. And when he gets there, the crowds have got there first. And it says this, but when he saw them, he had compassion on them and he healed them. Now, when it was evening, the disciples came to him and he said, Jesus, this is a desolate place and the day is now over. Send the crowds away and go into the village and buy food for themselves. Send them away so they can go and buy food for themselves. But Jesus said, they don't need to go away. You give them something to eat. So they said to him, but Jesus, we only have 5 loaves here and 2 fish. And so he said, and this is such a sick line, he said, bring them to me. And then he ordered the crowds to sit down on the grass, and taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven and he said a blessing. And then he broke the loaves and he gave them to his disciples, and the disciples gave them to the crowds, and they all ate and they were satisfied. And then he took up 12 baskets full of leftover broken pieces. And all of those who ate were about 5,000 men plus women and children. And then immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side whilst he dismissed the crowds. Last verse. And when he had dismissed the crowds, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. And when evening came, he was there alone. Oh, this is a sick bit of scripture. I'm going to just jump into a few thoughts I have on it that have been very helpful for me. So Jesus heals at his best friend. One of his best friends is dead. And he is understandably grief-stricken and devastated. And he chooses in that place of deep emotion and pain, he chooses to take himself away to a desolate place. If you look up the word desolate, it says fruitless and barren. He takes himself to a place where nothing will distract him from his emotional state. That's powerful. That's very challenging. I find that if I'm faced with pain and if I'm faced with an overwhelming sense of emotion, I tend to distract myself rather than take myself to somewhere that's desolate where I have to face it. And I've been in a season in the last year or so of grief. We've recently lost people that has been incredibly painful. And it's been a real struggle and a real tension to avoid distraction. It's never been easier than right now in history to be distracted. I don't even know you need to go into it. You all know it. We all know that we pick up our phones and we start scrolling till we look comatose just so we can be numbed, so we don't have to deal with what's in front of us. And that can be dealing with just the bits of pain and frustration that we have that we find happens in a day, or it could be an overwhelming sense of trauma or past disappointment that we just want to escape from. But Jesus shows us a new way. And this is the power of looking at the life of Jesus for our life today. Jesus is always showing us a new way, a deeper way, a better story to live out. Jesus chooses with his grief to go to a desolate place. Why? Because he wants to meet with God and he wants to feast with God. He wants to find peace with God, and he wants to do so in a way that nothing else could ever take the credit for. He wants to meet with God and receive a healing and receive a state of peace that will never be able to be credited to anything other than being with the divine, with God, in whom all things are held together, the Alpha and the Omega, the one who breathed existence into being, God. And that's such a wake-up call for us. What does it look like to take your pain and take your emotional state and say, I want to be in a place where nothing else could get the credit for what happens next, for the peace that comes, so I never can run to a different source. I can never go anywhere other than in the presence of God, into a place of meditative peace and silence to find true solace and oasis. That's so powerful. So the first thing that comes to mind here in this process that I'm going to call the art of being alone, the first thing that comes to mind is we need to find a way to take distractions out of our pursuit of finding desolate places. Take distractions out of our pursuit
finding desolate places? What do I need to do today, this week, this month, and this year to rid myself of distraction? I'm going to keep going because it just gets even better. He gets there, though. He gets to the place of where he wants to find peace and solace, and he wants to have like nothingness. He wants to have fruitlessness and barrenness. He wants to have a desolate place. But when he gets there, the crowd have already beaten him there, and they're already in his space. And I don't know about you, but I am an introvert. And if I find, like, I just went to a coffee shop this morning, and my prayer was, God, I pray that there's no one there that I know who could distract me, because I want to be alone. I want to buy my coffee. I want to sit read my book for an hour. I don't want to get interrupted. And if I got interrupted, I'm going to be frustrated because I'm an introvert and I want to recharge on my own. So I know the introverts listening to this will connect with it. But even if you're not, you know that feeling of having a desire and having a place that you want to get to that just isn't interrupted or corrupted by anyone else. And Jesus is in grief. He's in pain. And he arrives to this place where he wants to meet with God on his own. And there's people there. And not only is there people there, there's people that require something of him. And we learn something about leadership in this, because Jesus's first response to his pain is to take himself away to a desolate place. So the first thing that we see as a leader is Jesus is saying, my pain and my emotion matters. And it's worthy of separation. It's worthy of changing the agenda for the day. It's worthy of readapting my timetable. I'm going away for a while. That's the first thing we learn. That's the first thing we learn. You gotta put worth and value on what you feel. No matter what level of leadership or authority you have, you matter. Your heart matters. So take yourself away. Find a space and time to break. You know, to feel it, to be in it, to break, to have tears, to wail if you need to wail, to find a part of your heart that you can't find if you're performing or if you're leading or if you're always the person that people are looking to. You need to find a space where you can be broken and where you can be healed. That's the first thing we learn. But the second thing we learn is that when Jesus gets interrupted, his response is to have compassion. To have compassion and to heal the people. And this is so profound because my response, I think, would probably be frustration rather than compassion. And I think the reason of that is this, and this is all hidden in this text. Jesus is taking himself to a place to meet with God, and he knows that God's heart for him is full of compassion. Otherwise, he wouldn't allow himself to be alone with God. Sometimes we don't want to be alone with God because we don't believe that if it's just us and God, the overwhelming sense that we'll have is his compassion towards us. We more feel like it would be his condemnation towards us, so we don't desire to be alone with him. But Jesus knows that his Father is good, loving, and kind. So when Jesus is alone with God, he knows he's going to be filled up. He's going to be set free, and he knows that he's going to feel an overwhelming sense of compassion and loving tenderness from his Father. So when he gets to that place and he sees people that are broken, he automatically has compassion for them because he is aware that God has compassion for him. We cannot give what we don't have. We cannot take people where we haven't been. And it's so, so powerful. I tend not to have compassion for people based on the appetite that I have to receive compassion from God for myself. So if we're not taking ourselves away to desolate places, it's usually because we don't think that when we get there and we're alone with God, we're going to be met with kindness. And therefore, when we get interrupted, it's rare that we have kindness for others. Does that make sense? So that's really, really powerful. And that's really, really helpful of like, okay, if I want to become a compassionate person and I want to be someone who can be interrupted. And let me tell you, I've got a podcast coming, an episode coming called There Is No Interruptions, which I'm excited about. A little preview. But if we want to be somewhere where when we get interrupted, we feel like we have something to give in generosity and kindness, we have to begin by prioritizing the place where we can receive compassion and kindness. And then we get this really interesting conversation. His followers come up to him and they're like, all right, Jesus, you've been healing people and you've been setting them free, but it's time to eat. And they're hungry. The sun is setting. This is a desolate place, just to remind you. And I think you should send the crowds away so that they can eat. And his response is this: they need not go away. You give them something to eat. But Jesus, we only have 5 loaves and 2 fish. And then he said, bring them to me. All right. Why did Jesus see something that the disciples, his followers, couldn't see? They only saw a desolate place. They only saw lack. Jesus had a different opinion and perspective. Why? He had already defined the desolate place as the space where he would meet with God and feast with God. So when they saw lack, he saw a table ready to be laid. Why? He had already redefined that place as a space where his soul was going to receive from God. So the lack that they saw in their hands was transcended by the fullness that he had in his heart. When they came to him and said, but we only have this, he said, bring them to me. Because when you bring it to me, I'll transform it. Because I've transformed this desolate place into a decadent place in my heart. Are you with me still? All right. We can't give someone something from our hands that we don't already hold in our hearts. Jesus hadn't even received from God yet in the way that he was expecting to, right? But he had already set a precedent as this is the place where I am going to feast with God, where my soul will be fed, where my grief will be heard, where I will meet with the divine one who holds all things together. So when you come to me with lack, I'm going to respond with fullness. And then he takes the loaves and fishes, and it says he looked up to heaven and he said a blessing. This is so, so powerful. What is in your hand is defined by what's in your heart. And sometimes the manifestation of that or the physical act that reveals that is when you hold what's in your hand. And I'm talking about food here. It could be you hold what's in your hand right now, right? Your life, your dreams, your relationships, your marriage, your finances, everything. What's in your hand right now? What is in your hand that you look at and you see lacking? And maybe it is your relationships. Maybe there's so much tension and there's so much confusion and there's so much lack of connection. All you can feel is lack in your relationships. Maybe it is your dreams, your hopes, your purposes, where you feel like nothing's going right. No doors are opening. All I see is lack. All I feel is lack. Maybe it's your soul. Maybe when you think about yourself, you feel overwhelmed with a sense of lack. Jesus holds this mere offering, this picnic, this packed lunch in his hand, and he holds it up above him. He holds it up to above him. It says he holds it towards heaven and he says a blessing. Sometimes we have to hold up to heaven the mere offering that we have on earth to receive a different perspective on it. And sometimes we have to bless that which we think isn't enough, right? Sometimes we have to just bless it. Sometimes that's all you can do. Sometimes there isn't a five-step plan to get out of a situation. Sometimes the best thing that you can do is redefine it with a new perspective. And in Jesus, he shows us that begins in how we steward our own souls. He says, there isn't a place on earth so desolate, so broken, so dry, so barren that I can't meet God there. So there is no place on this earth where I can't feed others. Because if I can be fed wherever I am, then I can feed others wherever I am. The disciples said, we only have this. There is no only in the vocabulary of Jesus. And there is no only in the vocabulary of the person who lives fully present, fully here, and fully human. Because we don't live with a sense of lack. We don't live with a sense of entitlement. We live with a sense of gratitude, where we hold everything in our hands as a gift. So when Jesus said a blessing, he was announcing gratitude. I bless this because I believe that this is more than what's just in my hands. It's been redefined by the gratitude that I hold in my heart. Let me tell you three things about gratitude. First one, gratitude is the enemy of entitlement. Gratitude opposes entitlement. Entitlement is the sense that you deserve what's coming to you, that you deserve more than you have, that maybe you deserve what others have. Entitlement is the sense that you have a right to something. Gratitude doesn't work like that. Gratitude says everything is a gift. And if I get this, then it's because of someone else's effort. It's because of someone else's hard work. It's because someone else has gone before me. So if you're listening to this and you're like, well, I get that, but I'm here because of my effort. I went to university. I got in a graduate scheme. I've now got this job. I got this promotion. It's because of my work. I want to challenge it by saying, yeah, but the very fact that you have the mind capacity and the intelligence to do that which you're doing is a gift. And if you receive everything that you have in your hands as a gift, you'll be more present with it. Entitlement robs you of seeing your life as a blessing. Entitlement robs you of realizing this is all inheritance. Inheritance is receiving the reward of someone else's effort. And we have to recognize that our whole universe is set up in the way of inheritance and not entitlement. Everything we have is a gift. It says in James, every good and perfect thing is a gift from the Father of lights, in whom there are no shifting shadows. Every stage that I get to be on, every track that I get to spit on, is a gift. And the fact that it's a gift means that every time I do it, I get to receive it again, rather than feel like I have to take it again. Like, I'm going to take this opportunity. No, I'm going to receive this opportunity. And you know what happens then? You become more rested in what you're doing. The fight becomes less of what's driving you. And it becomes more of a fulfilled sense of peace and being. It says in Hebrews, strive to enter the rest of God. That's crazy. That the one time we're commanded to strive is into rest. It's like the ancient teachers of wisdom know this. We have a disposition towards earning and fighting and wrestling and hustling and working. It's what we do. It's who we are in many respects. So the ancient wisdom teachers say, strive to enter rest because that's where fulfillment is. You don't need to strive to become more tenacious. You need to strive to become more rested. Rest and faith are interlocked because when you rest, you're recognizing something is going to be done in your behalf because you're not doing it. That's why the Sabbath, the rest day, is so important. It's a laying down of your ability to have the credit for everything good that happens in your life. Perhaps the universe isn't indifferent. Perhaps it's benevolent. Perhaps there's this pulsing kindness that transcends all that we do and is directed towards who we are. And when we recognize it, we start living a little bit more full of joy because, hey, oh, this microphone I'm speaking into right now is a gift. The light coming through the window, shining on the back of my neck, is a gift. It's a gift. It's a gift. It's a gift. Breathe in. Breathe out. It's a gift. All right, so that's the first thing. Gratitude is the enemy of entitlement. Gratitude opposes entitlement. The second thing is this. Gratitude always finds a point of expression. Gratitude always finds a point of expression. So for Jesus, it was to say a blessing over the picnic and turning it into a feast that fed thousands. Your gratitude looks and sounds like something. There's a story in the scriptures, it's Luke 19, I believe, where Jesus and his disciples are strutting in the town and his disciples are dancing and they're rejoicing and they're saying, we have seen the sick healed. We have seen the oppressed set free. We have seen great and wondrous things and we are rejoicing because of it, giving thanksgiving. And some guys come up and they say, Jesus, shut those men up. They look ridiculous. Tell them to be silent. Jesus turns around and he says, look, if I tell them to be silent, then the very rocks will cry out. Whew, this is powerful. The very order of creation is set towards gratitude. The very order of creation is set towards gratitude because God pronounced over creation, this is good. So if we stay silent, then the very rocks below us will cry out. If we stay silent, if we don't express our gratitude, inanimate objects will fulfill our calling, our commission, and our purpose. Perhaps our greatest purpose in this world is to be grateful. Perhaps when we do that, we fulfill the order of all things. The third thing about gratitude is it's a gift for transformation. When Jesus blessed the loaves and the fishes, when he was grateful for it, when he held it under the light of heaven, not just under the perspective of earth, it transformed into a feast. So as you become more and more grateful, you're setting yourself up for something of transformation in your life. Transformation is the enemy of entitlement. It opposes your right to things. Gratitude always finds a point of expression. it looks and sounds like something. And in doing those two things, gratitude becomes this gift for transformation. When you rob yourself of entitlement, when you deny your right to something, when you lay down your rights, when you say, no one owes me anything. God has given me everything. So no one owes me anything. And when you say, I'm going to start rejoicing and I'm going to start practicing gratitude and saying thank you, then you start seeing transformation in your life. You start seeing things turn from picnics into feasts. You start seeing relationships flourished. Start seeing relationships flourishing because you start holding them under a different perspective. Not just your own, but what does heaven say about this situation? What does heaven say about this person? Ask that question. What does heaven say about this person? Maybe heaven says that this person, although I find them very frustrating, and though I find them very negative, heaven says about this person, they're doing the best they can with what they have. Wow. You might then start being a little bit more grateful for them in your life. I know that's worked for me. And the power of this whole story is it begins with Jesus in his grief, saying, I am going to spend some time on my own. And so I wrote this down in my journal a little while ago. The art of being alone and learning to practice the art of being alone, learning to be disciplined with the art of being alone, learning to be a craftsman in the art of being alone leads me to a place of gratitude and as a result, true fulfillment. There's a story I want to tell you. It's about a man who made an appointment with the famous psychologist Carl Jung. He wanted to get help for his chronic depression. And Jung told him to reduce his 14-hour workday to 8 and then go directly home and spend the evenings in his study, quiet and all alone. The depressed man went to his study each night and he shut the door. He read a little bit. He listened to some music. Put on some Mozart, some Chopin, read some Ernest Hemingway. After weeks of this, he returned back to Jung, complaining that he saw no improvement. But on learning how the man spent his time, Jung said, but you didn't understand. I didn't want you to be with those people, with Mozart and Chopin, with Hemingway. I wanted you to be completely alone. I wanted you to learn the art of being alone. The man looked terrified and exclaimed, I can't think of any worse company. And Jung replied, yet this is the self that you inflict on other people 14 hours a day. And Jung might have added, the self that you inflict on yourself. Jeez, that's powerful. The art of being alone is the process of recognizing that when it's just you and it's just God, there is kindness and there's compassion. There's tenderness, benevolence. There's love and affection pulsing, directed towards you. And until we receive it for ourselves, until we love ourselves, we cannot love our neighbors. We cannot have compassion on others. We cannot receive the transformative gift of gratitude until we first recognize that when it's just us, when we're all alone, there are good things to be received. So in practice of the art of being alone, I want to encourage you just to make very simple but very extravagant decisions this week to find desolate places where you would often be surrounded by crowds, you know. And for us, the crowd of our life is technology. It's the constant barrage of just email and connection at the cost of true fulfillment. And so for me, that has looked like very simple things like charging my phone downstairs so I can go to sleep and wake up in the morning without another 100 different things to distract me from my original thoughts and how I feel about the day. And this whole idea of being alone is scary for a lot of people and has definitely been intimidating for me, because when you're alone with yourself, you have to face who you really are. You know, I heard someone say recently, who you are when no one's watching is who you are, you know, and that can be terrifying. And so I want to leave you with this thought. You probably heard it said that God loves you, and it's true, but that can become a very sort of dry theological statement. I want to encourage you to engage with this thought. not only does God love you, not only are you loved by God, but right now in this moment, listening to this podcast, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, you are being loved by God. It's proactive. It's engaged. It's not passive. You are being loved by God, the divine mystery that holds all things together. There is a pulsing benevolence, kindness, and affection directed towards you. Yes, you, your soul, with all of the fear and the shame and the control that's going around your mind and your heart at the moment. You are being loved. You are seen and known. And it's only with that reality in mind that I think we can start really practicing the art of being alone and finding fulfillment within it. Finding a place to face our fears. Perfect love casts out fears. That means perfect love doesn't ask fear to leave politely. It casts it out. But we have to find a sense of at least peace in the invitation of being alone. That when we're alone with ourselves and with God, we won't find, you know, the other end of that conversation, there's condemnation. No, it's the opposite. There is compassion and acceptance. So I want to close with a benediction credited to Saint Francis, who's one of my heroes. If you know me, you'll know I got him tattooed on my arm and I wear him around my neck. I love the guy. I think he embodies so much of who I want to be when I grow up. And this benediction wasn't necessarily written by him, but it's credited to him and his order and his practice, the Franciscan way, because it exemplifies who he was and what he was about. And I want to say it in closing as a commission and as a charge to us all. So all right, listeners of the Pilgrimage Podcast, here we go. May God bless you with discomfort, at easy answers, half-truths, and superficial relationships, so that you may live deep within your heart. May God bless you with anger at injustice, oppression, and the exploitation of people, so that you may walk for justice, freedom, and peace. And may God bless you with tears, to shed for those who suffer pain, rejection, hunger, and war, so that you may reach out your hand to comfort them and to turn their pain into joy. And may God bless you with enough foolishness to believe that you can make a difference in this world, so that you can do what others claim cannot be done, to bring justice and kindness to all our children and the poor.